Why, Mommy, why? This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with the thought for today. Why, Mommy, why? The purpose of discipline is different for each person. Little children who are growing up in a family are being trained in discipline to get along happily and harmoniously with the rest of the family and with the rest of the world, and however the family is training them to be a proper human being, a proper individual. Now you go to school and you get training in the reading, writing, and arithmetic and all the other sort of things that come along, and this is a wonderful time too, but the training that you get at school is different. And so the questions of why, Mommy, why, would be quite different in school as they would be at home. And yet, they're quite similar. And you go into a business, and you're in the business, and the owner of the business says, do it this way, and you feel that you can do it better your own way, and the owner of the business says, no, do it this way. You say, why? Why should I do it that way? I can do it this way much more beneficially than if I do it that way. If I do it that way, I will not enjoy doing it as much as I enjoy doing it this way. Well, why, Mommy, why? It all goes back to that. You're taking a course in karate. You're taking a course in training in the physical arts, in the martial arts. And as you're training, your instructor gives you different things to do, and you think to yourself, what a silly thing to do. What a silly thing to do. What a silly thing. What could I learn from that? You might be sanding wood, and you go around one way, and you go around the other way, and you go up, and you go down, and you go in, and you go out. And Karate Kid Revisited, which took place in Beijing. We watched that the other night. The young man was told to hang up his coat and then put it on and then hang it up, take it off and hang it up and then throw it on the ground and then pick it up and put it on and hang it on the post and on and on and on. Through the rain, through days and days and days of articulation of this action. And the young man said, I cannot see any purpose in this. I don't know why you're having me do this. And his instructors just said, do it. Do it. Do it until it becomes your second nature. And it rather did become the young man's second nature, where he had thrown his clothes on the floor at home. Now he started hanging it up. He started hanging his jacket on the rack rather than just dropping it on the floor. But, of course, he dropped it on the floor because his mother had not trained him earlier to do it. She always picked up after him because he was a little boy and because she loved him and she wanted to do things for him. And so she never trained him. Then all of a sudden it became an irritation that he was old enough to hang it up. Well, he was always old enough to hang it up. But she didn't know that. And so she began her training a little late. Well, sometimes all of us begin our training a little late. We begin our training after we're adults. We begin our training after we're older people. And we wonder why it is that we are not proficient and sufficient in many areas that we would like to be. We would like to speak our word and have our word instantly be done. Well, all of our life we have spoken our word and we didn't expect it to be done. We hoped it would be done. We spoke our word without conviction. We spoke our word without the realization that our word has power. And because we spoke our word in such a fruitless way, we had a meaningless response. Some people can speak their word and wonders happen. Others speak their word and nothing happens. Why, Mommy, why? The purpose of discipline is different for each person. We don't always understand why that discipline is done that way. The Japanese have, and the Chinese, and many of the Orientals, in doing certain types of work. They lacquer their work, and they lacquer their work, and they polish the lacquer, and then they lacquer it again, and polish the lacquer, and they lacquer it again, and sometimes they put on 50 or 60 coats of lacquer, and 50 or 60 coats of very dedicated polish. And you think to yourself, what a silly thing to do. What an absolutely silly thing to do. And they do this on not only chopsticks, but other ornaments and things that are totally, apparently, unimportant. Totally, apparently, unnecessary to lacquer so often. But they're trained by their teachers to first prepare the surface. And prepare the surface as smooth and beautiful as you can. And then put a coat of lacquer on it. And when the lacquer is totally dry, then to polish that lacquer and to polish it again and again and again, to polish that lacquer so that it is so smooth and so perfect. Then they put another coat of lacquer on and they polish that lacquer. And they do this sometimes 100 times. And you think to yourself, what absolute foolishness. Well, is it foolish? What's happening while they're polishing this lacquer? While they're polishing this lacquer, it doesn't need a lot of intelligence. It just needs persistence. And as they give it their persistence, they undoubtedly are saying mantras. Mantras are quite common with the Asians, and they say them with diligence and with dedication. And as they're lacquering and polishing these items, they're saying, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. Now, you don't know that. You don't know that. You just see them lacquering and polishing and dedicating themselves to doing something that, to you, a machine could do much quicker, or it truly wasn't necessary to give it so many coats of lacquer. Well, for these dedicated people, these people are promoting themselves in the field of the mental science. They're promoting themselves in the field of aware of their divinity, aware of their majesty, aware of who they are. Now, we don't hear them saying, I like me. We don't hear them saying, I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. We don't hear them saying these things. But as they're lacquering and polishing and polishing and polishing and polishing, you can be sure their mind is not empty. Their mind is speaking many wonderful affirmations, many wonderful mantras, many wonderful statements of truth about themselves. Now, if you ask them, are you speaking statements of truth about yourself? They say, what are you talking about? What do you mean? What are you saying, I like me? Well, no. Well, what are you saying while you're polishing that? Nothing. Nothing. And then you say to yourself, no, that's not true. It cannot be true. They must be saying something. Now, if you were to be inside of that person's head, you would realize that they spend a great deal of time in meditation. They spend a great deal of time in inner awareness and in inner illumination and in inner brilliance. They spend a great deal of time there, and it doesn't show on the outward, and they don't think of it that way. It has become a sort of a foredrawn activity within them. It's something that they just do naturally because they've been trained, they've been disciplined in this early in their life. In fact, from their very childhood on. When you are taught to look both ways before you cross the street, when you are taught to walk along the street and mind your own business and pay attention to the wonderful streets that are around you, the city. Pay attention to the trees and the flowers and the people and the plants. Pay attention. But just enjoying it, not involving yourself in the other people's lives, not involving yourself in their problems or their convictions or their joys, just your joy of participating in life as you see it. It becomes a second nature to you. And this second nature is what all teachers would like to teach their children, would like to teach their people, would like to train into every student. The second nature of doing it just because you're told to do it. Now, you think this is a thoughtless thing. Well, the young man who was told to hang up his jacket and throw it on the ground and put it on his shoulders and hang it up and hang it up was going through a particular training of releasing the feeling of anxiety. His instructor said to him, "What is your attitude about hanging up the jacket?" And so he got a supercilious attitude on his face, and he said, "Is this better?" And the instructor didn't say anything, because the instructor knows that he told him what to do, and it is up to him now to follow through. Well, time passed, and the young man trained in doing this. And he trained in doing this. And he trained in the rain. He trained in the sun. He trained all time. And as he did this, he became very proficient. And then at some point, he said to the instructor, "I think this is a lot of baloney sauce, a lot of garbage, a lot of unnecessary thing." And so then the instructor put him through every movement that he did to hang up his jacket, to drop his jacket, to put his jacket on, and showed him how every movement he was making was indeed a karate movement, was indeed a movement of great skill and great joy and great precision. And he did it unthinkingly. He just did it naturally. So when it came time to put the jacket on, his movement was such with his arms. When it was time to take it off, his movement was again another activity. When it was time to hang it up, it was one activity. When it was time to drop it, it was one activity. When it was time to pick it up, it's another activity. And all these activities, which seemed unrelated to itself, became a pattern of the very skill that the young man wanted to learn of learning out the martial arts. We don't always know how our instructors, how our teachers, how people in life are training us to be the magical people that we are. But if we do have someone that we have chosen to be our music teacher, to be our school teacher, to be our spiritual teacher, to be any program person for us at all, if we have chosen anyone, then we should choose them and say, "Okay, do your thing with me. I will do whatever you ask me to do. I will not question anything you ask me to do. I will just do it, and I will do it diligently. I'll do it with the right happy attitude, because I am learning something even though I don't necessarily see what I'm learning." Now, if the instructor had told the young man, "Now you're developing your hand movement in this way, your arm movement in that way, you're developing your skill in this way, you're developing your attitude in that way," the young man would have said, "Ha, ha, ha, ha." At one point, they were at a great temple, and there was a cobra out on the edge of the temple over a great drop. And there was a student standing and talking to the cobra, giving the cobra 100% eye contact, no matter who walked by, no matter what was going on, giving the cobra 100% eye contact. And the cobra and the student who was giving the eye contact were one. And the master said to his student, he said, "Concentration, concentration, being able to think only one thought, being able to put your attention only on what you're doing, And there were many other illustrations that were quite charming. When you learn something, if you question your teacher as to why you're learning what you're learning, or how you're learning what you're learning, or what's the purpose of learning what you're learning, you'll find that the teacher will have many different purposes, and different purposes for different students. Some students quickly gain certain skills, and others are not so quickly. And so they work on those others that are not so quickly, but they still work on the ones that they gain quickly, because they want them to be second nature to them. When we have the skill of being ourselves second nature to us, when we have the right attitude toward life, when we have these sort of things going on in our world, what happens to us? Well, what happens to us is that we begin to be more harmonious with ourselves. We begin to like ourselves better. We begin to be able to concentrate. I often speak of this one lady who, when we were visiting with her at any time, and we would visit with her, I would talk with her, and she would give me her 100% eye contact. She'd give me 100% attention contact. There was no pretending on the eye contact. It was demonstrable of her total nature toward me, or anyone else. Whomever she was speaking with, she gave 100% eye contact. Now, she learned this, and it could be rather intimidating and overwhelming, but when you realize it was done with absolute sincerity, then you were no longer intimidated by it. You are no longer having the feeling that something was not too good for you. You come to the feeling that perhaps it would be good if you would learn that one-pointed eye contact when you are talking to anyone, or when you are doing anything at all, to have this one-pointed eye contact. The ability, not necessarily to stare with the diligence of staring at a cobra, to keep both of your attention one-pointed, but with the same result, with the same wonderful result, that you are a living master. You are living what you believe. It has become second nature to you. Are you ready, really, to be a person who gives their total nature to whatever it is that is important to you? Are you the kind of person that would like to accomplish great, beautiful things in life? If you're the kind of person who'd like to accomplish great and beautiful things in life, then it's time to really give full attention to whatever it is you're doing. You give full attention to lacquering a stick, a chopstick, and full attention to polishing it. But in the process, you are using several aspects of your being, one the physical aspect of polishing, and the other the mental aspect of polishing your inner spirit, polishing your divine self, polishing your all, your allness, polishing your soul. For your soul is like the diamond of your being. It is the representation of who you are as an individual. And as you polish that, and as you bless that, and as you illumine yourself in the awareness how great that is, then great and wonderful things happen. Everyone can do this. Everyone can do this. Some people seem naturally able to give their dedication to training, to discipline. They seem naturally to give their ability and their dedication to the oneness of the art that they're working on. The purpose of discipline is different for each person. For the discipline that you're learning to become a karate student is one thing. The discipline you're learning to become a student of music is another. The discipline you're learning to become a spiritual master is another. Oh my! Sounds rather grand to become a spiritual master. Well, to become a spiritual master is no different than any other training or any other art. First, you say, I want to become that. And once you say you want to become it, then you realize that you want to be aware that you already are it. And when you're aware that you already are it, then that which you are, you demonstrate outwardly. The karate student always was an ideal karate student, but he wanted to be a karate master. And the way to be a karate master is to give yourself 100% into the training, the discipline, the art of being aware that you already are. Being aware that you already are a musician, being aware that you already are a great student, a great master, a great being, being aware that you already are a spiritually illumined being, being aware of that, oh, what diligence that takes, what dedication that takes. Being aware is having it be your second nature. Because truly, you are not aware of the allness, the isness, and you're not aware of all the grand aspects of these things. But you are aware as your second nature, as you live in this reality, as you live in this presence. You instantly know exactly the thing to do at any given moment. You instantly know how to be an illumined being on planet Earth. You instantly know how to have everything be a second nature, a nature of magic and goodness. You instantly know that. Now, are you ready to be that? Are you ready to enjoy that in your awareness? Are you ready? And if you're ready, then truly, it is ready for you. If you ask your teacher or your trainer or your person you're working with, your mother, why? Why, Mommy, why? Those are good questions if they are questions that really mean something. But oftentimes they're questions that are asked just to be sort of difficult, just to be sort of obnoxious, just to say you don't want to do it and have them stop asking you to do it. Well, believe me, if you ever do it to stop people from asking you to do things, you are out of business. You are off the path of whatever it is that you choose in life. And you will be, in every way, manner, and shape, you'll be sort of ordinary. You'll be not an accomplished being at all. You'll be a very mediocre being. You'll be a very ordinary being. And you'll find that the majority of humanity is made up of ordinary beings. These ordinary beings are people who protest the very thing that they would like more than anything in the world. They protest whatever teacher comes along. The teacher might be a very ugly, terrible, mean, hateful, disgusting, swearing person that irritates the living daylights out of you. And the teacher, that teacher is teaching you, maybe not knowingly that they're the teacher to teach you that, but you have created that in your life so that you can be untouched by that sort of a response. You can be untouched by bad language. You can be untouched by things that might be irritating to anyone else. You can be untouched. And as you are untouched, unconditionally, you are loving in every wonderful way. And as you're loving in every wonderful way, you begin to realize that you knew it all along, that you're always untouched. You are always the supreme being of yourself. And as you polish the lacquer on anything, as you do any type of job and you do it perfectly, you do it as beautifully as you can, you're not really polishing anything, making it perfect, because the perfection is already there. What you're doing is you're giving yourself meditation time. You're giving yourself dedication time. You're giving yourself the opportunity to reveal who and what you are and how wonderful you are. And as you're given this opportunity, you think to yourself, how great it is. How great it is. How great it is. When the mother says to the child who kicks at her and says, I don't like you, I hate you, and the mother does not accept that, she just says, well, sweetheart, what seems to be the problem? Whatever the problem may be, if the problem is her, the problem is anything, it doesn't matter to her. She knows the child is suffering under a problem. And so she's going to bring about a solution immediately. And as she persists with motherly love, as she persists without being touched by how he's acting or she's acting, as she persists, he lets go of all that anger, all that hatred, all that animosity, all that desire to not be told by somebody else what to do or how to act or how to live. And he mellows out. And then the real problem comes forth, and it is solved because it is known. And you don't pay attention to the problem, but you instantly pay attention. Well, let's see what we can do about that. Let's see what we can do about that. And with that love, the learning is assured. With that unconditional love, the majesty of a master teacher, the mother with the child, is once again revealed in its beautiful, fantastic way. Why, Mommy, why? How often we heard that as parents, and how often it disturbed us. But as we thought about it, the purpose of discipline is different for each person. And while one child might ask, why, Mommy, why? Because he wants one answer. Another child might ask, why, Mommy, why? On the very same thing, but he indeed wants another answer. And the awareness of which answer is the right answer is not always easy to know. But with a parent who is unconditionally loving, with a parent that really cares, the answer is there, and the solution is there, and the awareness is once again revealed. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you. I love you. I love you.